You're listening to the God Guns Liberty Podcast with JC Holmes.
Welcome to the God Guns Liberty Podcast. This is JC Hall. You can find this podcast at chrisannehall.com, K-R-I-S-A-N-N-E-H-A-L-L.com. Go to chrisannehall.com, follow the podcast there, audio podcast you can follow. You can also find links to the Rumble channel, and we stream on LinkedIn and Facebook as well. You can also find our friend Jesse James of the Dangerous Info podcast there at chrisannehall.com, and the links to his show. Lots of good stuff there, so make sure you check it out. If you listen to this on audio, then make sure you find your way to chrisannehall.com to find articles. You can also find blog posts from Chris Ann and shows from Chris Ann, videos from Chris Ann, teachings, and then also our friend from Breathe Easy, our friend Rob, writes some really great articles at chrisannehall.com, so make sure you go there, check out all the stuff. So in the news today, a historic moment in the U.S. House of Representatives. For the first time in U.S. history, we had a successful motion to vacate the speaker chair, and the United States of America is without a Speaker of the House. The House of Representatives has no official elected leader at this moment in the chamber. Kevin McCarthy was ousted, and so what's going on there? And people, you know, and now you see all the sides aligning, and you know, Democrats here, and you know, the Republican split or the nature of portions or factions of the Republican Party is being made evident. And so very interesting hearing all the arguments out there. So I wanted to give you a little background, a little education, a little information of what's going on, what can we expect, what's happening, what does this mean, and how should we see and understand the arguments that are being made. So what happened? What happened? A motion to vacate was filed by Matt Gaetz, and a vote was held on that motion, and the vote was successful. Kevin McCarthy is gone. How do we get to the place where, some would say, a single member essentially is able to oust the Speaker of the House? Well, this has to do with a couple of things. One, the slim margins in the House of Representatives. So when we, you know, we had our election, quote unquote, air quotes, elections in the House, we ended up with a rather slim margin between House Democrats and House Republicans. Republicans ended up with the majority, but the majority is so slim that you essentially have a 5-vote cushion. So in other words, the Republicans cannot afford to lose 5 members' votes, right? Or you could say it like this, get 5 or 6 members to, you know, imagine if you had all the Democrats and then 5 or 6 members of the Republican Party vote on something, then it could pass with just you know, those small number of Republicans essentially dictating what's going on. And this is what happened in this case. The other thing is, so slim margins, that's number one. How do we get there? Slim margins. So it only took 5. Republicans can only afford to lose 5 votes in support of whatever they're trying to do. So basically you need practically every Republican to get anything done in the House. Number two, this has to do with because of the slim margins, right? And because that put the small number of Republicans in a position that they could leverage that to force some concessions from House leadership. So that's what happened, what we saw, you know, during the McCarthy vote to you know, you saw the all that it took to get McCarthy into the House Speaker chair in the first place, because that small number of Republicans, you know, basically leveraged that to say, you need our votes. And even to become House Speaker, you can't become House Speaker without our votes. And so they use that opportunity to leverage that for concessions out of Speaker McCarthy. So, you know, I remember on this show, we were trying to convey what was really going on. Everybody made it about, you know, different things that, and then said, oh, well, Matt Gaetz and this crowd caved because they finally let McCarthy be Speaker. It wasn't about keeping McCarthy from being Speaker back then. Not everybody, but so many conservatives just did not comprehend this. It wasn't about trying to keep McCarthy out at that time. It was trying to get concessions from him once he was put in as Speaker. In other words, you will not be Speaker unless you agree to these terms. And some of the, and he agreed to many of those terms. One of those was to bring back the rule. And if you understand the House, the operations of the House are all about the House rules, which is pretty crazy. But they brought back the rule where that it only took one member, a single member, could file a motion to vacate. And so that's how we got here. We would not have been in a position to be able to oust the Speaker had it not been for that first go-around of forcing him into concessions. And one of those concessions was that any single member could file a motion to vacate the chair. So, weird thing. The House was supposed to be in recess this last, you know, this week or what have you. They were all supposed to be in their districts. But it was Kevin McCarthy himself that had, you know, basically called them into, you know, made them come to work. You know, they're in session. So a weird sort of turn of events that McCarthy is responsible for kind of opening the door to his own demise. So then as soon as, you know, as soon as they show up, Matt Gaetz files his motion to vacate the chair, which had to do with this most recent, or at least, you know, the narrative is it had to do with this most recent fight about the budget slash government shutdown, alleged government, looming government shutdown. And what basically in that, from the side of Matt Gaetz' camp, you know, these, the conservatives, the Republicans of that type, the Democrats call the, you know, extremist. So in that camp, the position was the Speaker of the House is an incredibly powerful position. You have these slim margins where, you know, you can force negotiation, cooperation, force concessions from the other side to be able to deal with the budget. Remember, the House holds the purse strings. Chris Hann has been teaching and arguing this for a very long time, and everybody's saying you're crazy. And, of course, we just saw the power of holding the purse strings with basically pulling the Secretary of Defense's paycheck and, you know, essentially, in all practical purposes, firing him. But anyway, you had these promises from McCarthy of, you know, wringing out negotiations with the budget from them and all this sorts of stuff. So Matt Gaetz in that camp looks at the alleged looming government shutdown because the budget, you know, the date on the budget is going to run out, right? They fund for a certain amount of time, and then there's an expiration date essentially on the budget. The clock hits zero, and no more funding is authorized. So then they have to keep, you know, you have to make a new budget. But for years and 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 years, decades, there's been no legit budget, no actual budget. They pass what they call continuing resolutions, which is kind of like everybody agrees we'll continue to fund the government at this level for a set amount of time. And so they sidestep the budget. Even when they do pass what they call a budget, it's not a budget. It's called an omnibus bill, which you just throw everything together, pass it as a whole, and it doesn't go to the separate committees. I think there are like 12 what's known as appropriations committees, where these committees are supposed to go through the budget, you know, and actually look at it and decide what's, you know, what's supposed to be there, what's not. Instead, it's just everybody gets whatever they want, omnibus bill, pass it, and the government just keeps spending. The government keeps expanding. And so that's what's happened. That's been the routine. And the rhinos love spending. The Democrats love spending. It's all about the spending. And so you have Matt Gaetz on that side saying, you know, hey, here's the opportunity for us to deal with this out-of-control spending, to really deal with what's at the heart of the thing that enables government to tyrannize the people and just do all the crazy stuff that it does, because if you have the money to do it, they do it. If they don't have the money to do it, when you make this thing smaller, then it's less of a threat to liberty and less of a threat to the American people. So this is what Matt Gaetz and that camp is after. And they thought they had a guy with the concessions, or at least he made these promises. Kevin McCarthy is all about making promises to everybody. And so he promised to do this. But in this last little bit, he says, no, we'll pass a continuing resolution for another 45 days. You know, and we'll just keep spending like it is. And he's just apparently, according to the Gaetz camp, not interested in negotiating. He just wants to keep spending and give the Democrats a blank check. So Matt Gaetz and I think about eight of them said, all right, no more. And he filed the motion to vacate. Now, another sort of interesting twist is you have 48 hours. So if he files the motion, you've got 48 hours to get a vote on this thing. Well, McCarthy says, I'm not going to wait. Let's vote on it now. And, you know, when you look at all of the McCarthy camp and all that they were saying and all, you know, they're talking, they were very, very confident, almost arrogant, that, well, there's no way they have the vote. There's no way you can vote Kevin McCarthy out. They're going to lose. So Kevin McCarthy moved immediately to have a vote on this thing. And, you know, we know how that happened. He lost. And another apparent, I don't know, confidence or arrogance or presumption was that the Democrats were going to support McCarthy. So, you know, they were confident there's no way this is going to be successful because, you know, Matt Gaetz and his camp don't have enough support on the Republican side. And then, you know, the Democrats aren't going to go with them either. You know, they like McCarthy. They think McCarthy's somebody they can work with. And of course, he's making all these promises to them, which he breaks. Then he makes promises to the Republicans, which he breaks. So for whatever reason, McCarthy assumed he had all this support on both sides, and he didn't. And so because you're dealing, obviously, with a Democrat side who's, you know, very radical, and they're very happy to, you know, disrupt anything and just roll the dice and see what happens. Because, I mean, it's they have nothing to lose, right? Because Democrats just, they're not in power in the House. So it doesn't really matter to them. Why should they support McCarthy anyway? So these guys, Matt Gaetz and that crowd, you know, were in prime position to make this successful. And they did. And you know, with that Democrat presumption where McCarthy thought for some reason the Democrats are going to support him, it's interesting that on the Democrat side, you're dealing with, like, this is not business as usual. This is not the 90s. You know, it's not some sort of let's negotiate, let's get along. In the Democrat camp, I mean, most of those guys are so radical that they literally say, you know, the Republicans on that side are fascists. Like, we're talking about, we're dealing with Nazis and we're not going to support Nazis. I mean, they are that crazy. You know, this is how they see things, many of them. And then the rest of them, of course, even if they don't see it that way, go along with the narrative. So it's fascinating how the Democrats will just stand on principle and vote or not vote based on that. But with the Republicans, it's always sort of the calculation of politics, all about politics. You think of, in fact, I even heard somebody, the one guy that, gosh, I forget his name, but the total Looney Tune from New York that has all these problems. You know, he's a Republican, but they won't get rid of this guy because, you know, we can't censure him, we're not going to do anything with him. And they sort of either explicitly or implicitly support this guy because, you know, in their calculation, we just can't afford to lose that seat. We can't afford to give any ground to the Democrats. So, and you know, that may be true from a political perspective. In fact, I guess that is true from a political perspective. But it seems like it's always, like, no matter what it is, it's always a political calculation with most of these Republicans. It's never principle. It's never just, this is right, so we're going to do what's right. It's always power. And I get, if you're not in power, then, you know, you can't move anything forward. But, you know, sometimes you have to do what's right. And then doing what's right will, you know, help you expand your position in the future. Whereas when people see you always conniving and sacrificing principle, then it seems to me, even though you're saying, well, we have to do this because we have to stay in power, well, you're undermining your power because you're undermining the support within your own base. When they look at you like you're just a slimy, crooked Republican, just like the other side. You don't care about the people. You don't care about principle. You don't have backbone. You don't stand up. It's always some negotiation, some political negotiation. So they always say that, and you always hear that from the rhinos, and I think you'll hear that in the midst of this. You know, all the rhinos are turning against Matt Gaetz and these Republicans because it's always that argument. We can't get anything done. We don't have a speaker now, and we're trying to do the business of the people, da-da-da-da-da. But most of it is business as usual, and they don't want to not spend, you know. So they'll make that argument about this stuff. Well, you know, we can't afford to be divided, and we have to wield power and accomplish what we can while we can in the space we're given, in the power we're given. You'll hear all of those arguments, and again, from a sort of pragmatic perspective. If you just look at that surface argument, yeah, that's it. It's true. It is true on the surface. But the deeper problem is it just perpetuates the monster that is being created. They're not really doing the hard work, the unpopular work that needs to be done to shake up this beast and to drain the abusive power, the tyrannical power. It's like they're not interested in doing the hard things. So then, you know, you see the small minority, a guy like Matt Gaetz and this small group of people, you know, they're going to be the bad guys. Most of your voters are, eventually the pressure builds and they'll side with the rhinos. A majority of people are going to side with that. We got to get things done. This is just dividing the party. You're just giving ground to the Democrats. You're giving them fuel. You're going to hear all of that because all the pressure will drive people to that side. So it's really rare that somebody says, you know, I'm willing to risk my reputation. I'm willing to make things messy because I'm here to do the hard work. I'm here to bring to light the real problems and bring to light the real distinctions of people who really want to get down and dirty and do the hard things, or those people who want to go, you know, just business as usual and compromise and pussyfoot with the other side, like somehow we're in normal circumstances. Like you're not dealing with, you know, they think like it's the 90s and, you know, we're just we just want to get things done and get things done for our district and, you know, and get money into our district and, you know, and fund the military and fund the police and, you know, all these sort of wrapping the flag arguments, right? It's always some turd that they wrap in the stars and stripes and you know, they get like veterans and everybody, patriots, rah, 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 cheering for some turd just because they wrap it in the flag. So you hear all that stuff. You'll hear all that coming out and just constantly with the rhinos talking all this nonsense. So I think it's being exposed so that we can see who's who. But you know, these guys are going to be in the minority, I think, for sure. And as I said, you know, that perspective, like, it's business as usual, like, as if you don't have people, you know, locked up in D.C. as political prisoners, as if you don't have an army of absolute insane, confused lunatics trying to devour our children, trying to destroy the nation. I mean, it's a strange, it's a bizarre thing to me when I look at so many of these rhinos, and it's like they're out of time. It's like they're still stuck, you know, like this is just 1994. In fact, they worked harder in 1990, like they fought the system harder in 1994 under Newt Gingrich and those guys, more so than a lot of these rhinos today. So it's very weird to me. We're in much more desperate straits now than we were in the Gingrich house, in that, you know, the house revolution, whatever you call it there. Like, we're in much dire times now. So how are all these rhinos less radical than the Gingrich Republicans were in 94? That's bizarre to me. Why do we even have you there? Right? You can take this to the bank. You're going to hear this all week. Right now, there's like 7 days where we know we're going to be without a House Speaker. They say they're going to vote next Wednesday, and so you're going to hear all this week. You're already hearing it. Who was? I forget the. I should pull this up. One of the Republicans is targeting. They're already targeting Matt Gaetz. Let me pull this up. We're talking about Republicans. So Representative Garrett Graves out of Louisiana. So he says the House of Representatives frozen because of clowns like Matt Gaetz. If we're going to continue to have clowns like Matt Gaetz as part of the Republican conference, as part of this Congress, listen to that, then you're going to have rules in place that prevent him from doing his charade every single week. Now, what is Matt Gaetz doing? What are they trying to prevent Matt Gaetz from doing? Matt Gaetz is trying to force Republicans to hold the line on government spending, right? Trying to shrink this abusive overreach and excess spending. Because what is sinking your future? What is crushing small business right now? What is crushing the middle class right now? You look at this inflation that's happening. Where does inflation come from? Inflation comes from government spending, pouring excess currency, like inflating the money supply, just ballooning debt, ballooning spending, right? This is like the number one thing that is absolutely destroying the country. So Mr. Conservative Republican Garrett Graves, Republican representative from Louisiana, says we must have rules to stop this. I want you to think about that, because I promise you, I don't know a lot about Mr. Graves, but I promise you, being a Republican from Louisiana, I'm sure he ran on limited government and you know, stopping the spending, blah, 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 all these conservative talking points. But when it comes to doing the hard, ugly work of making that happen, of forcing this conversation, of forcing these procedures to take place in the House, then he has to get rid of those who are trying to do it. And when he says we got to keep them as long as people like this are part of Congress, what does that tell you? That tells you that their little conference and the pack that's behind, you know, with the Republican representatives in the House are going to target Matt Gaetz and everybody with him. So you're talking about, you're going to see these Republicans, House Republicans, who believe in business as usual, are going to take all of the finances, the donations, and the money that you give to them, Okay, this is your money. So all the donors out there donated to Mr. Graves and donated to the House PACs and all this stuff to get House of Representatives elected. They're going to be spending your money to make sure, right? This Graves and his guys are going to put money into Florida, which I believe ought to be illegal, by the way. Shouldn't be. If you're not in a state, you shouldn't be able to send money into this state to mess with elections, any state. But they're going to be doing that, taking your money to try to take out the ones who are trying to cut the spending and tackle the spending question and the expansion of government, right? That's Mr. Graves. So in other words, Mr. Graves is saying, anybody who gets in the way of us spending more money and expanding government, we got to take them out. We got to make sure they're not part of Congress. Okay, so I want you to listen very closely to all these conversations, and because you know we got to get things done, da 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 da. And I tell you to my fellow veterans out there, you hear all this, you'll hear a lot of this talk from the veteran members. Let me say to my fellow veterans, you better stop voting based on identity politics. You see all these jacklegs come up and, you know, with their medals and with their shiny little badges and wrap everything in the flag, and then you vote for them because of rah, 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 you know, rah, rah, veteran, war and soldiers and Navy SEALs. And, it's a veteran. I'm a veteran. Let's vote for a veteran. And you vote for these idiots like the one down in Texas. And they just continue business as usual, just rhino to the core. Spin, 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 and do anything that big government wants to do. But I'm a veteran. I'm going to vote for a veteran. That's how stupid we are. Vote for the identity politics. All right, he's a Christian. I'm a Christian. Let's vote for the Christian. This is how they manipulate people. Republicans voting identity politics. You don't pay attention. You know, what's the history of these guys? What are they saying? All right, what are they really saying? Not on the campaign trail, but you know, looking into what is this person about? Is anybody asking them tough questions? Are they giving tough answers? Or are they a bunch of frauds just trying to manipulate you and play you on emotions and you know, and ride their accolades, not diminishing whatever they did for the country, you know, as a veteran or in the military, whatever. But that's got nothing to do with you being in the House of Representatives or, you know, being a representative of the people and doing your job. Now, I get sick of that nonsense. You know, well, I'm a veteran. You can't talk to me like that. I mean, you hear, I've had politicians talk to us that way. Like, I'm a veteran. I'm a veteran too. Shut up. Who cares? That's got nothing to do with nothing. So, you know, what are you doing? You're a Navy SEALs aren't elected. You don't elect Navy SEALs. You go through buds and you know, do that's how you become a Navy SEAL. So what does that have to do with being a House? Oh, I'm electing him because he's a Navy SEAL. What? What are you talking about? What does that have to do with anything? So you got to stop that stuff. You got to knock it off. We're always loyal to these guys just because of some identification that they manipulate you with. Give me a break. That's how we get here. So this is where we are. First time in history, and you know, and you hear Democrat talking points like every time a government shutdown has happened in 30 years, it's been a Republican majority. It's been a Republican House. Well, duh, it's the Republicans who want to rein in the beast. Like, Democrats are never going to want to do that. But if you find somebody who does want to do it, well, they're probably going to be in the Republican Party, right? But it's always some minority trying to deal with a bunch of rhinos who want to go along business as usual. So you saw this challenge with John Boehner. You saw this challenge with Paul Ryan. So it's, you know, it's not unusual in that sense, but this is the first time that it actually stuck. So who's going to be Speaker, right? This is the question. Can Trump become Speaker of the House, right? So let's get to that question. Can Trump become Speaker of the House? I'm going to answer that. We're going to let you know. But first, let's take a quick break. Christian, take us on a break, and we'll come back and answer that question. Can Trump be Speaker of the House?
I've got a voicemail on the church phone. The voicemail was from the New Mexico State Police, and the officer said that New Hope Revival Church is non-essential and must shut down. I knew I needed to connect with the sheriff. I knew it was the chief law enforcement of the region.
I remembered getting to attend a Chris Ann Hall seminar in Albuquerque, and she had talked about the Shire Reeves.
And I said, listen, I want to know if you'll stand for God Rags. And he looked me right in the eyes and he goes, Pastor, I will defend you even if it means I got to go to jail myself.
Then, all righty then, we're back. So the question is, can Trump become House Speaker? Well, the answer is yes. Yes, he can. Absolutely. You do not have to be a sitting member of the House of Representatives to be Speaker of the House. They can elect anybody. So the answer is yes, he can. Now, will he? So procedurally, yes, that's possible. Politically, is it possible? Will it happen? I would say it's highly unlikely because, you know, you'd have to get 218 of these people to say, yes, we want Trump. Again, as I said before, many, if not most, of these Republicans make their decisions based on political calculations. So some of the Republicans in the House majority, are in swing districts. You know, they're Republican in essentially a purple district that voted for Biden. So you have a couple of these folks that they would have to decide, you know, what they're going to do in that circumstance. So I don't think Trump as Speaker of the House is likely, but it would certainly be historic, and it would be just another. Another point on the crazy times that we've been living in for the last several years. Would I like to see it? I would love to see it just, if not just for the entertainment value. I mean, we've seen Trump as president. That was amazingly entertaining. You want to see the Democrats from sea to shining sea lose their ever-loving mind, make Donald Trump Speaker of the House, then elect him as president right after that. I think probably every Democrat in America would launch themselves into space, never to return, which you know, some might say is not a bad thing, but not likely. So who is likely to become Speaker of the House? Christian, can you go back to that graphic where it shows the House leadership and the makeup, that list that I put up there, that picture? Are you up there? Yeah. So if you look at that, you see kind of the makeup and breakdown of the leadership where we're at now. So obviously we had Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy, who is gone. So right now, Patrick McHenry, which I think is from South Carolina, one of the Carolinas. He is Speaker pro tempore. What does that mean? He's essentially the temporary Speaker of the House. But the problem with that, he's limited in his functions. So when you, Speaker of the House is very powerful. The House of Representatives is very partisan. So the majority does whatever they want, and the Democrats, you know, theoretically, the Democrats, you know, shouldn't be able to do pretty much anything if you have the majority. Now, you can negotiate and throw them a bone and allow them to do stuff, whatever. I don't know why you would do that at this point, how radical the Democrat Party has become, but that happens. So, but when you talk about the Speaker of the House, why is the Speaker of the House position so powerful in the House of Representatives? One of the main reasons is the elected Speaker of the House gets to decide what bills will be heard. So, you know, if the Republicans are in control, theoretically you get Republican legislation. That's it. You know, there's no reason that there has to be Democrat legislation that comes out of the House. I mean, you can go through that with no Democrat legislation whatsoever. The Speaker, because the Speaker has the power to say what gets heard and what doesn't get heard. It'll never even see the floor unless he allows it. Now, the Speaker pro tempore does not have that power. So he really doesn't have authority in legislative matters. Pretty much he just has authority in parliamentary matters. So he's just going to sit there and bang the gavel and, you know, run the thing that's happening. And only certain things can happen when you don't have an elected speaker. So you're not going to see any legislative work. No committee hearings. So you really can't do regular business as usual just under the temporary speaker. So you notice there the majority leader is Steve Scalise. And then you have a whip, which is Tom Emmer. The whip is kind of like the manager. He's the one that makes everything goes around and visits members to get, you know, see what their support is or talk them into supporting some particular bill. And then you have the conference chairs and policy committee chairs, those things. So that's kind of the leadership structure. Remember, the Speaker of the House is third in line to the president. If something happens to the president, vice president, boom, Speaker's third in line. So very, very powerful position. So the top position under him would be the majority leader. In this case is Steve Scalise. So Steve Scalise is what shall you call it? Campaigning. He's going around and talking to members, trying to get support to be the new Speaker of the House. So that's one individual who's thrown his hat in the ring. Kevin McCarthy said he's not going to pursue the seat again. So he's done. That's it. Bye-bye, Kevin McCarthy. That's history at this point. So Steve Scalise has thrown his hat in the ring, as well as Jim Jordan from Ohio. I think everybody out there is pretty well familiar with Jim Jordan. You see him sit on these committees and, you know, going at the Democrats and whatnot. He does a really good job at conducting the committees. He does a really good job at sort of making the arguments, when he has the seat there and has the microphone for what that's worth. So you have those two are kind of your main guys in, let's say, competition for Speaker of the House, Steve Scalise or Jim Jordan. Now, Representative Andy Harris out of Maryland has floated the suggestion that Byron Donalds from Florida should be considered for Speaker of the House. I don't know the level of support for that. One thing about the House is it really works on the seniority thing. So they're really, really kind of big on seniority. So then in my mind, Byron Donalds is amazing. And as far as qualifications and ability, you know, he would absolutely be an amazing choice, in my opinion. I mean, I think he'd be an amazing choice for governor, amazing choice for president, whatever. I'm 100%. I support Byron Donalds 100%. Everything that I know about Byron Donalds, I support. Now, people can make criticisms. There are some things people could say. I know a lot of the inside behind some of these criticisms, and I can say personally, even the things that have been floated that are criticism, I personally looked into, found out what they're actually about, and I say I have no doubt about Byron Donalds. I have no questions about him. I have no concerns about him. I 100% support Byron Donalds. But with the seniority thing and knowing historically how that functions in the House, I would say under normal circumstances that's not likely. But at the same time, we're not under normal circumstances. You see the vacation of the chair, vacate the chair, you know, first time in U.S. history. So could we have a first time where, you know, essentially a new guy would jump into what normally they'd look at as a senior position or something, more deserving as far as blah, 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 whatever they come up with. And so I think it would be hard for Byron to jump over Jim Jordan unless Jim Jordan were sort of to say, okay, I'll make way. So I don't see that, because another thing, when you talk about that seniority and then you jump over people, you're looking at reprisals, right? They're very sort of vindictive and petty and catty in this place. The House of Representatives is a rough and tumble chamber, where the Senate, you have to be more bipartisan. The Senate is slower. The Senate is more, you know, mild-mannered operations over there. The House is not like that. The House is cutthroat, knives are out, and serious business. So you can come back to me, Christian, off of that graphic. So it just gives you a picture of how that's laid out. Scalise, I think, is meeting with the delegation in Texas, trying to whip up support from the Texas delegation. Why Texas? Because that's the largest House delegation with 25 members in their caucus. So he'll be meeting with those and trying to whip up support. Some others have said, you know, they're waiting to see. They'll hear everybody's case, you know, and give everybody consideration. And some have said that Patrick McHenry could be in that position for a while. Now, the thing about that is, the longer we go without an elected House Speaker, the closer we get to that 45-day deadline on the continuing resolution for the budget. In other words, we are quickly approaching another government shutdown, you know, time. That's normally just theater over and over and over again. We go through this government shutdown nonsense, and traditionally it's just been theater. It's been meaningless. I don't, you know, they always get to the point where something is negotiated and then they end up spending more of your money. I guess that's what Matt Gaetz and crew are trying to change. So it's not just theater. So they don't just continue business as usual, and they don't just come out the other side of this thing and just keep spending your money. After, you know, everybody was, oh my gosh, the government is going to shut down, and they get everybody freaking out, only to get to the point where we keep doing the same thing we've always been doing. So I don't know if that's going to end up being any different. I don't have a lot of confidence. Now I wasn't really confident that they were going to vacate the chair, but here we are. So I don't have a lot of confidence that something is going to be accomplished in another looming government shutdown. On the other hand, if you have a different speaker and the threat of vacating a chair has proved to be real, maybe that makes a difference. Now, maybe they can just go change the rules in the meantime and then you know, get rid of the threat. Who knows what's going to be happening. But anyway, I hope it gives you a little understanding, insight, the slim margins, and the compromise put Matt Gaetz and that small number of Republicans in the position to make this happen. Matt Gaetz filed the motion to vacate at a time where Kevin McCarthy called them into session when they shouldn't have been in session. Kevin McCarthy quickly moves to a vote, apparently thinking there's no way this is gonna succeed, and Matt, you know, he's gonna make Matt Gaetz foolish. Some would say, you know, maybe Kevin McCarthy was looking for a way out, an easy way to quit. Who knows? Maybe. I don't think so, but maybe. Because it is strange. He called him in and then he called a quick vote. Who knows? I think the arrogance is more likely that he you know, he just thought there's no way it's going to succeed, and he's going to finally, you know, get enough support to take Matt Gaetz down and get rid of these guys. And maybe that works in that direction anyway, but he's gone. So I don't know. So they take him out. It's a 45-day continuing resolution. You're at least another week without a House Speaker. Can't do regular business. Get you closer to 45 days. We don't know how long the whole voting thing, that took like a week last time. So we could be 2 weeks into the 45-day period. The clock's ticking on another government shutdown, and you got to get the next leadership in there and begin those negotiations again to figure out what you're going to do. So that window is closing very, very quickly, getting to another government shutdown moment. I think that's kind of the biggest takeaway. So we'll see in the next little while who's going to end up being the guy. Steve Scalise, Jim Jordan, Byron Donalds, Donald Trump, or somebody else. We'll see how it goes, and then we'll see how they handle the spending issue coming out of that. We'll see. Do they really have an appetite to rein in federal spending? My gut tells me no, because it's still a vast majority. If you're talking eight Republicans, then how many does that leave? 210 who still have an appetite for bloated government spending. So we shall see what a small minority of committed conservatives can actually accomplish. We'll find out in the next 45 to 60 days. Going to be interesting. All right, this is JC, God Guns Liberty Podcast. I'm out.
You're listening to the God Guns Liberty Podcast with JC Holmes.